Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is musician and Patreon founder Jack Conte. But first of all, let's talk a little bit about radio. If you haven't noticed, radio is dying. Just take a really good listen to the commercials, and you'll find that so many of them are public service announcements. That's right, they're unpaid commercials. And what that means is that radio, which normally makes a whole lot of money, is starting to make less and less. Well, that's important to musicians because forever, and to a certain degree, it's still the truth, radio means a big deal in terms of promoting an artist's latest release. And with fewer and fewer people listening to radio, that means they must be discovering their music someplace else, and of course they are. So let me give you a couple of figures, first of all, that shows where the listening public is actually getting their content from. One of the most interesting things is that more millennials now watch YouTube than watch TV. And guess what the most popular television network is right now? It's Netflix. One third of millennials don't even have a radio in the house. And if you're between 13 and 24, you're streaming much more on your smartphone, and yes, 13-year-olds have smartphones, you're streaming much more on your smartphone than you're listening to AM and FM. And what's interesting here is the fact that everything is so on demand. Television has sussed this out already, and they're already transitioning to apps, and they're finding ways to get their content into people other than via the television. But radio hasn't been that smart. Radio still is clinging to a 20th century model, and it's not working. And as a result, there are fewer and fewer advertisers because they would rather put their advertising dollars in a place that works, and radio certainly isn't at the moment. Total radio listening, in fact, is down by about a third over the last 10 years, and this includes all demographics. This includes everything. So what we're finding is a changing of the guard, and if radio doesn't smarten up pretty soon, you're going to find radio falling by the wayside. Already it is, and I know that I feel sometimes that there are certain things that I would like to listen to, but I don't want to listen to, or I can't listen to them right now, and there's no way I can get it online. So as far as radio is concerned, I don't matter, and neither do you in many cases. So I think we're going to see that whole medium wake up pretty soon, because they're going to have to change. If they don't wake up soon, in fact, the business will be gone. If you have any questions or comments, send them to questions@bobbyownercircle.com. Don't forget to check out my 101 Mixing Tricks program and my other online video courses at bobbyosinskicourses.com, as well as my music industry and music production blogs. Just go to bobbyosinski.com to find the links, where you can also read excerpts from my books. Now, guess what? Pro Tools 12.6 is now available for you Pro Tools users out there. And I know many, many people are Pro Tools users, especially if you're pros. That being said, there are more and more people that are looking for an alternative. Studio One seems to be coming up really, really fast from all reports. That said, if you're in the Pro Tools world, if you're in the pro world, that's probably where you live, and there is a brand new version with some features. So let's talk about them. Probably the most exciting feature is something called clip effects. Now, up until now, if you wanted to add effects, and this is any kind of processing, effects processing, if you wanted to add it to a clip, you would have to automate and then render it. And in fact, what would end up happening was it would take some time through your whole workflow in order to make that happen. Now, what happens here is for every clip, you can have completely separate processing, and it doesn't require any rendering, doesn't require any automation. It actually uses a new channel strip that's kind of imported from the Euphonics System 5, which is very cool. And of course, Avid bought Euphonics quite a number of years ago now, and we're starting to see more and more things from Euphonics, and this is very cool. System 5 EQ and filters and everything were always very good, and now we're starting to see them incorporated. One of the downsides of this, even though it is a very, very interesting additional new feature, it's only available on the HDX system. So if you don't have HDX, it doesn't matter. Now, on the other hand, there are a few other systems. One is called layered editing. And what that basically is, if you had recorded a clip on top of another one and you decided to eliminate that clip or edit the top clip, what would happen is you'd have a hole underneath. And in fact, this no longer happens. So what that ends up is you have two separate layers that you can actually edit on the same track. And that's pretty cool. Probably should have had that a long, long time ago. There's also some new things with fades and some new things with the playlist. One of the best things with the playlist, in fact, is that if you were to record something new over an existing clip, it would automatically go to a different playlist. And right now, all it does is it covers up the existing clip, which can be somewhat of a pain. And it's not anything that doesn't cost you time, and that's about all, but this makes it a little bit easier. Again, something that should have happened a long time ago. And yet another thing is some real-time fade properties. So now you can go in there and you can play with the fades just by grabbing them with your mouse. And again, something that we probably should have had a long, long time ago. This is one of the problems with Pro Tools. All of these things have been around for a long, long time on other DAWs, and we're only starting to see them now on Pro Tools. Pro Tools is still playing catch-up and all this stuff. Now, where they are ahead is if you're a power user, especially in post. There's a lot of great new features, especially if you're in the film industry, especially if you're in the heavy, heavy-duty post industry with hundreds and hundreds of tracks, but that doesn't apply to most users. So Avid is, in fact, way ahead of everybody there. But when it comes to the average user, when it comes to you and me, they kind of lag behind, and as a result, there's lots of people that are looking around, and you've heard on this show from a few insiders over and over that Studio One is looking better and better for many, many people. So we'll see what happens in the future. I'm going to AES pretty soon. You'll hear my report next podcast, and I'll tell you what I find out there. My guest today is Jack Conte, who showed just how powerful DIY can be with some very widely viewed videos on YouTube as half of the duo Pomplamoose. Jack has gone on to found Patreon, a platform that helps creators make a living from their work through subscription payments from their fans. I spoke with Jack via Skype from his office in the Bay Area. Everybody has a story about how they started in the business, and it's kind of different for everybody. So what's yours?
About how I got started?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. How far back do you want to go?
Let's go to where music became a significant part of your life.
Okay. That goes back to high school. Actually, maybe it goes all the way back to when I was around six. I started taking piano lessons from this piano instructor. My dad taught me the blues scale. I started kind of realizing that I really liked improvising and writing songs and making melodies and stuff on the piano. And then that got more serious in high school. But yeah, it really, in high school is when it really started dawning on me that this was something that I felt like I was here to do and felt really deeply impactful and sort of meaningful to me. You know, I started writing for big band and doing a cappella arrangements for my a cappella group. And I played in jazz combos and jazz orchestras and started writing songs, and that's when I started listening to pop music too. I didn't really listen to pop music until I was, you know, the later stage of high school, which was really weird. but that's when I really fell in love with, like, you know, I felt like, oh wow, I could do this.
You do so many things, and you do so many things well. What do you consider yourself? I mean, are you I look at your Skype handle, and it makes me think that you think of yourself as a cinematographer or a filmmaker first. Is that true?
The Skype handle, let's see, I probably created that Skype handle when I was a freshman in college. I don't know, somewhere around there. No, I don't consider myself a cinematographer first. I do love cinematography, and I've studied cinematography, and you know, I love color and composition and light and cameras, and I'm fascinated by all that stuff. I love telling stories through cameras. But I wouldn't say that's what I love first. I think maybe I find that, like, no matter the medium, I love narratives. I love, like, you know, stories. I love logical sort of progressions of events and arguments and ideas. And I like making those things. So I like Sometimes it doesn't even have to be a story. I generally like constructing creative things that are engaging to consume. I know that's super vague, but I like making things that are creative, and that could be a video, it could be a song, it could be a company, it can sort of be anything that takes a lot of work to think about and make, and takes creative juice to kind of, you know, to put on earth.
Now, I know I became aware of you through Pomplamoose, through your videos, and the videos have seemed to be the most important part of that combo. But it also seems to be something that you're particularly skilled at, because, boy, your videos are great. I mean, you look at them all, and there's a lot of thought that goes into them, and a lot of work, obviously. So where did that come from? Because, again, there's enough of an effort that goes into the music, and that's tough enough. But when you also combine the video with it, that's an awful lot of work, and boy, you crank them out fast.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, and it's funny because, you know, I started, so in college I loved making like short films, and I shot probably a dozen short films or more, and directed a few, and wrote scripts, and, you know, I was very involved in the filmmaking scene at school. And I actually was going to go to film school. And then at the last minute, I dropped out to be in a pop band. And so I started really focusing on music, and I did for years, for maybe like two years, I was just like super focused on music. And then a friend sent me a link to a YouTube video, and there is a kid singing his song, and he had like 300,000 views. And I went back to my MySpace page, which was the sort of music distribution site at the time. And my MySpace page was getting, you know, 3 plays a day. And this kid was getting 300,000, and I was going, okay, I'm uploading my art to the wrong website here. And the funny thing is my effort in video, was really a means to get my music out there. And I really thought of the video as the packaging. I didn't think of it as the art itself. I thought of the video as the delivery mechanism for the music. And I tried to like create these equations that would just de-stress me, that would take some of the creative burden away from the filmmaking component. So I created this format called the video song, that would basically convert any song into video that could be put on YouTube. And that way I could sort of keep concentrating and keep devoting my creative energy to making music, but sort of formulaically pump out these videos that would then, you know, help me put my stuff on the website where the people were, which is YouTube and not MySpace. And I think I did enough of that to the point where I fell in love with making videos again, and stopped thinking of it so much functionally, and started really enjoying the creation process of the video, and that became another sort of part of what really made me tick and made me excited to work was thinking of the video component again as a creative endeavor, not just a formulaic way of pumping, you know, music into film.
When you write now, do you write in terms of the video as well?
So, to tell you the truth, I'm not really doing much of that. You know, Patreon is almost 80 people, and we've raised over $47 million of venture capital, and we have over 20,000 creators in over 100 countries who are counting on us to deliver on product and engineering, and I don't want to let those people down. That's a lot of people who are trusting us and this team and me to give this my all. And so, you know, I'm devoting so much of myself, more of myself than I've ever devoted to anything, I'm devoting to Patreon. And I've stopped kind of, you know, making the videos and music for now.
Okay, I understand that completely. So let's go there for a second. How did Patreon come about? It's a great idea. What was the impetus for it?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a pretty basic thing, honestly. I was making enough money to kind of do my thing, but I and maybe a little bit more. I mean, Pomplamoose, you know, we sold enough MP3s you know, I bought a house and we built a couple of recording studios on the property, and so we're doing fine. But we weren't able to like scale a business. We weren't able to like hire a team, and you know, we had one person who was full time who was helping us, but you know, we sort of looked at what we were making and the ad revenue we were getting from what we were making, you know, $150 a month for a million views, like that just felt really wrong. Just felt, it felt like we were delivering a lot of value to the world, and there were fans who were writing comments and excited, engaged, and liked the music, and we could tell, you know, there was excitement around what we were doing, and the fact that that was generating 150, that the videos were generating $150 a month for us, like online, that was just so fucked. That yeah. just doesn't make any sense. And so the thought was, gosh, I feel like I'm giving more here. I wonder if my fans would give me $1 per month just to keep doing what I'm doing, like so that I could focus more on telling stories and writing music instead of doing my taxes and you know, accounting and managing the business, you know, like help, can I scale this? Can I hire a team and help me focus on doing what I do best? And that was the idea. It was, will the fans, you know, step up and contribute? And I knew they would. I mean, I'd seen Natalie raised over $100,000 on Kickstarter, and we were doing stage at shows where people would come and they'd watch a online show and they'd tip. And so I knew the fans would do it. And I knew that they were supportive and awesome and generous. And I called up I sort of drew out the whole thing on 14 pieces of printer paper. It was just, the idea was like, okay, look, I'm making stuff. Will you give me $1 a month so I can keep making more stuff? That was it. And I drew it out. I drew out the website in chicken scratch pencil. It was really awful. And I called up my freshman year roommate, who is a serial entrepreneur and a wonderful engineer and product thinker. And he turned the whole thing into a reality. And 3 months later, we launched with Patreon. And you know, instantly, we started getting tons of creators signing up because they saw me. I was making, you know, within 2 weeks, I was making $5,000 per video, which was way better than $150 a month.
Wow, I'll say.
And so, you know, creators just started signing up for it, and that's how Patreon started. It wasn't strategic. It wasn't, I wasn't even intending for it to be like a company, you know. It was just this thing that we kind of, I felt like I wanted to have, and I felt like other people would want it to, and that's that. So that's how it started. Now, that's not what it is now. You know, now Patreon is, you know, it's a whole team of people who are devoted and caring and strategic and you know, incredible and smart and thoughtful and wonderful engineers and designers and product managers and support and sales and marketing and legal, finance. I mean, it's a big organization and a really great team. And yeah, I just never would have thought, you know, and I was not expecting this. I didn't think my life would go here.
Well, at what point did you realize, wow, this could be a lot bigger than I originally anticipated or intended?
Yeah. You know, I wish it was a moment, because that would be a great story. And it's not a moment. It was little bit by little bit. And one thing after the next that just was indicative that there was something here. And, you know, it started with launch day when I got $700, you know, in the first 3 hours, $700 per video. I thought, oh my God, I could break $1,000 per video. That would be unbelievable, you know. And then I broke $1,000, then I got all the way up to five. And then, you know, then we raised $2 million of venture capital from three VCs and some angels. And I was like, oh my God, we just raised $2 million. And I opened up our Wells Fargo account, and there's $2 million of cash in a Wells Fargo account. Like, that would, like, for a dude who 2 years ago was living in his dad's house, like, yeah. that was a really, that was a big thing to open up a bank. Now, it's not my money. It's not like I had $2 million, but the company was only three people, and we had to figure out how to spend that $2 million to get more creators, you know? And suddenly resources don't become a problem, you know? That's a really weird feeling to have when you've been a musician for the last 5 years. And then, like, all along the way, you sort of are getting these little signals that, like, wow, there's really something here. But there was never, like, a Spielberg slow zoom in on my face, and I had this light bulb go off and realize that the future would be me as a CEO. That didn't happen.
Who is the typical Patreon artist? Is there one?
Yes, but it's not what you think. There are shared attributes of successful creators on Patreon. Lots of people think, like, the questions people ask, you know, they'll say, like, oh, which categories, which verticals are the most popular? Is it musicians? You know? And that's not really, I don't want to say that's not the right question, but it turns out that's not what matters. It doesn't matter what category you are. The other thing people think is, what they'll ask, like, what percentage of my fans will convert to patrons? And it turns out, I don't want to say that's not a good question again, but that also doesn't matter. It's not about the percentage of your fans that will convert. The shared attributes of successful creators on Patreon, if I had to boil it down to one sentence, and I'm sorry if this is vague, but it is qualitative, and I think it's qualitative because the web has had a difficult time measuring it. The shared attribute is creators who love their fans and fans who love those creators back. Those are the creators who do really well on Patreon. And it doesn't matter if they're podcasters or if they're musicians or if they're webcomics or if they're YouTubers. If they love their fans and they give to their fans and they make beautiful things and they do t-shirt contests and they respond to tweets and they, you know, go on tour and hang out and they really love their fans and the fans just can't get enough and just love them back and just, you know, send them stuff in the mail and write them emails and respond to them on Twitter and answer their polls. And, you know, if your fans love you back, those are the creators who do really well on Patreon, the giving creators and the giving fans. And so, it turns out that that's a whole category of creators. There's this whole segment of creators that are so motivated and they love art so much. They love making art. They love making things. You know, I think they're a lot like me. They like telling stories and making things and being creative and they want to devote their life to it. And so they, you know, they know that part of that is like being a really great community manager and building and growing an audience. And those are the creators who really do great on Patreon.
Is there a category of creators that surprises you or surprised you that, wow, this category really has a big following or, you know, something I didn't expect? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. And there have been a few of them. I think the one that stands out most to me is this category called ASMR. It's like auto-sensory something response or something like that. I don't even know. It's a very, I had no idea it existed. And it's like, some people describe it as a braingasm. Other people say it makes their brains tingle. It's usually a video of, it's often women and they'll like crumple paper next to a microphone or they're like, they'll whisper into the microphone. And they'll like make these very soothing, soft, kind of subtle noises, and they'll turn up the microphone volume so you can like really hear them. And it's this very intimate feeling kind of thing. And these videos will be like 45 minutes. And like I would have seen one of these videos and be like, what the hell is this?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, right.
You know, it's not like they have billions of views on YouTube. I mean, they do okay, but you know, they're not like PewDiePie, you know, and you know, they're making 3,000, 4,000 bucks a month on Patreon, which is just amazing. And they're doing it with these, you know, 45-minute braingasm videos. I think it's just like, honestly, I freaking love that. Like, that's what I think is one of the most beautiful things about the internet is the stuff that we used to think was niche, the stuff that we used to think didn't serve a big enough audience. Like, it turns out it doesn't serve a big enough audience if you have millions of dollars of infrastructure and overhead and delivery costs and retail and brick and mortar locations and transportation and marketing resources. But like, if you've got a company behind a thing and it's only reaching a million people, well then guess what? A million people isn't enough. But if you're a creator and you can reduce your overhead and work from your house and buy a $200 video camera and do a thing and make 7,000 bucks a month, 10,000 bucks a month, and you don't have to support 80 employees, like, I don't care if it's niche or not. That's a great business. If you can make $10,000 a month and, you know, and slowly scale that, and wow, that's awesome. Like, that's my favorite thing about the internet is this viability of what we used to consider to be niche audiences.
I'm pretty confident when I say this, that there is no such thing as bad music, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
In that, there's an audience for everything, and it doesn't matter what kind of music you're playing. There are people, and there's probably plenty of them out there, that love what you're doing. But the problem always is, how do you find them? Because they're there. There's no question. And you know, you've seen it. They're there, but it's collecting those people. Is there a way within Patreon to do that?
You know, we were talking about that this morning. Discovery, I think what you're sort of talking about is discovery.
Yeah.
As a concept, as a category of things that we could prioritize.
Yeah.
And the discovery experience on Patreon is not lacking. It is lacking. The discovery experience on Patreon is lacking. It's not for lack of execution. It's for lack of prioritization. And it's not something that we focused on. What Patreon does really, really well is what we're doubling down on. And here's what we do really well. If you have an audience online, but you're using ad revenue to monetize and to make money as a business, you're just not making very much money. And so what, like, Patreon's superpower is we can literally pay you like 100 to 200 times what you make through ad revenue.
Wow.
That's Patreon's superpower. We do that exceptionally well. And so our product and engineering roadmap, we prioritize that. Like, how do we do that even better? How do we make that the best in the world? Like, what can we be the best at? And there are other companies who specialize in helping you go from zero to fan. And the way Patreon thinks about it is, we don't help you go from zero to fan. We help you go from fan to money, from fan to business, and from fan to patron. And so we're leaving zero to fan. We're leaving that up to other companies for now. We'll get there eventually. But you know, the name of the game at a startup, when you only have 80 people and you're up against YouTube, who has 1,000 people, 1,000 engineers or whatever it is, the name of the game is prioritization. It's like, not what are all the things we could do, but what are the most important things out of the 125 things that we want to do? What are numbers 1, 2, and 3 that would be the most impactful and help creators the most? And for us, that means helping you go from fan to patron even better.
Does Patreon have any competition? You can't look at a crowdfunding site as competition because it's apples and oranges, really. But is there another company that's sort of doing the same thing you are?
The only direct competition that we have is basically mirror images of Patreon geared for other countries in other languages. So there's a French site that's basically doing exactly what Patreon's doing. Not basically. It is exactly. It's a clone of Patreon. There's a Japanese site that is a clone, literally a clone of Patreon. Like, it even says, like, so-and-so is creating this. So, like, it's I mean, they've literally like stolen design elements. So yeah, there are several competitors in other countries. The only competitors in the U.S. that get close are a few, but no one's really kind of had traction or grown, you know, beyond like a first round of funding or a first, you know, wave of publicity or anything.
Yeah, yeah. I know Patreon had a bad security breach a while back. What was the story behind that?
Yeah, so we had this security breach. We were notified. We got an email and we did some digging and realized that there had been a breach. It was a pretty incredible 2 weeks. I was just super impressed by the way the team responded. We were like round the clock. We went into round the clock mode where I got on the phone with a dozen security experts and CEOs and securities engineers from all over, from Facebook, from PayPal, from Microsoft. You know, we contracted with a third party security firm and we had them do an internal audit. We did an internal investigation where we went over like every little event. We mapped out the entire thing in a document and down to like every login, every detail, what exactly happened and when. I was super impressed by how the team responded to that. And then, you know, at the end of the day, we built a whole lot of stuff, including two-factor authentication and a lot of stuff to make sure that we were, you know, on a super safe path moving forward. We hired a security engineer from Dropbox and, you know, I think we, gosh, it was an amazing couple of weeks. I think Patreon we made leaps and bounds. We were already like a very secure site and now I don't want to say it's iron, you know, whatever. You can, the thing with security is you're always doing your 100% absolute best is like that's what you do. You have to do that. So that's where we are. Anyway, that's kind of the long version, but I was so blown away by this operation, this response, and all the things that I learned in those couple weeks.
Well, speaking of what you've learned and what you've been doing, so you come from being a creator and living your life every day as a creative, and now you have a different hat on.
Yeah.
So how has being a creator helped you do what you're doing now?
That's a great question. It's been indispensable. I think because part of being a creator is not being super process oriented. You got to have some sense of process. You got to have some sense of process to be creative because you have to know how to break process and how to break expectations. I think a lot of creativity is breaking expectations, right? If you do what's expected, then it's not very creative.
Yeah.
So breaking process, breaking repeated behavior, breaking expectations is kind of a creator's job. And I feel like that's, you know, very similar to just making new things, being innovative. And so much of a company is about setting up process and setting up repeatable behaviors and human systems and computer systems to scale. And, you know, it's important to take a step back too and realize when you have to go out of process in order to make something new. And so that's been one learning is, you know, being at a company, I've had to learn how to get way better at process. And because I have that creative background, I know, you know, I don't want to lose my soul and my heart. And so, you know, I'm able to kind of tap into that every once in a while when I need to. And then there's a million similarities. I could sort of go on for hours, but the similarities of being a creator and running a professional creative business and a tech company. I think at the end of the day, it comes down to, you know, giving back to people. Creators love making things for their fans. Tech companies love making things for their users, and creators feel the same way about their fans that tech companies feel about their users. It's like you do anything for your fans, you know, and tech companies are the same way. I mean, there's Patreon. We do anything for our users, for our creators. We'll do anything for them.
But, you know, I get the feeling listening to you that this isn't a burden on you, that you're approaching it from a creative standpoint. Because let's face it, a lot of creators, when they're thrust into a business role, just find it so depressing and so dark because it's not them. But I get the feeling from you, that's certainly not the case. And you're approaching it from as a creative and you're looking at it differently. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. It is definitely the most fulfilling and exciting thing I've done in my life. I'm not going to say that it's not dark occasionally because you know, you just asked about the security breach. Like, that shit is not fun. Like, that's just not fun. And it is dark. And there's a lot of responsibility and a lot of trust and a lot of power. And, you know, that's not easy to kind of, like, I'm not coasting. You know?
Yeah, right.
I feel a lot of pressure. But I'm also learning so much, and that is, it's like a drug. Honestly, the amount of learning that I've done in the last 3 years, I can't even describe what that feels like. It is like, it feels like supercharging yourself. It feels like so much growth and expansion. It's so exciting. So any kind of darkness that I have, I do try to mitigate with that long-term gratitude for the chance to grow this much and to, you know, to be part of something this impactful.
To find out more about Patreon, you can go to patreon.com. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com. If you want to find out more about Jack Conte and Pomplamoose, go to pomplamoose.com, P-A-M-P-L-A-M-O-O-S-E, Pomplamoose, just the way it sounds. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyoinnercircle.com, or you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Mixcloud, and Google Play. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.